Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, Episode 53, The Huge Adventure. I'm your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, Scott Michella.
Hey, Chris.
Hello. Glad to have you back. You know, last week, we weren't able to do a show together because I was off at E3 and you were super busy with work. But now we're back and we're going to follow up with all the craziness from last week. Going to talk about all my hands-on impressions from the show. I was down there in LA and I checked out every bit of 3DS and Wii U software I could get my hands on.
Awesome.
So, going to have lots of impressions from that. And then we've also got other things to talk about, new releases and, just other game impressions and other bits of news that have come out. So let's just dive right into it with E3, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right. And I guess the natural place to start would be with The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
This game looks really good. I think the hullabaloo about whether they were going to have a female playable character, I feel like Nintendo kind of missed out by not having a playable female character.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of got off on the wrong foot there, but I'm hopeful because it just looks so good.
Well, it doesn't just look good. It plays very well also. I was able to play the game for almost an hour, I think. They had two demos at E3, one that was just, jump right in. You've got a whole bunch of weapons and abilities at your disposal, and you can just explore this area as much as you want for about 20 minutes.
Okay.
So there was that, and then there was a more focused demo that starts apparently the same way you're starting the game, where Link wakes up coming out of this resurrection chamber, and he's just in his little boxer shorts.
Yep.
And then you go out, and you have to do whatever you're sort of guided to do. You talk to the old guy and you hear this voice in your head, and you're supposed to go and activate this tower that's off in the distance and maybe try to get to this dungeon. But I guess I shouldn't say dungeon, I should say shrine, because this demo does not have any of the full-sized dungeons of what the final game is going to have. This just has a handful of these more than 100 shrines.
Wow.
Yeah, and obviously the game is just vast. There is so much to it. And even playing for almost an hour, I barely scratched the surface.
So you were confined to that plateau area that I saw in the treehouse demo? Is that right? For the second demo?
Well, for both demos.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I wouldn't really say confined because it's so big. They say that plateau makes up about 2% of the game, and I feel like I explored about 2% of that area.
Really?
Well, just because everywhere you go, there is stuff to look at and things to do, and you want to see, what's over here? Are there treasure chests over here? Oh, there's an enemy encampment. I could, just walk on by and ignore that and go do something else, but no, I want to go fight them instead. And there's treasures everywhere, and, you can just spend time, trying to climb the trees and pull down fruit and switching your character's gear around. Or maybe you just want to try going hunting for food and then combining the food items. Because it's got this whole wealth of stuff in there, and you can only do so much. It was hard to not get distracted by everything that was going on in the demo. So I had a total of three play sessions, two of these open-type sessions, and one that was more just the beginning of the game where you start out with nothing. And you just have to, run through, get your gear, do all that stuff. And I was having a very fun time with it. I was enjoying just looking around and exploring. And what I said last week on the show, the feeling I got was that it really brought back the sense of wonder and exploration to the Zelda series, more so than has been in the most recent games. And that's really how it came through. That's really how I felt when I was playing it as well. It really brings back that wonder and amazement.
So does it control very much like a 3D Zelda game?
For the most part, I suppose so. It still has the lock-on, L targeting, or whatever it's called these days. And that wasn't really clear to me from the trailer and from the footage they were showing from the treehouse. I thought maybe that had gone away. But no, it's still in there. It's just not quite as obvious. Obviously, the big change is that there's a jump button.
Jumping, the jump button.
Yes.
Did that give you more of a challenge to figure out how am I going to play this now with an extra button?
A little bit. I guess I didn't really have my brain wrapped around it too much. There were some times where I'd sort of, you know, confuse myself as to whether I should hit the jump button or the dash button to do something. And I never figured out, actually, which button you're supposed to hit to do those evasive maneuvers in combat to be able to dodge out of the way and go into slow motion. And I asked the person who was at the demo station, and they didn't know either. So that was unfortunately something I did not quite figure out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm used to in Zelda games where if you're locked on, maybe hit the A button, you'll do a jumping slash. But in this, like, oh, well, I actually want to hit the jump button to be able to do a jumping slash. Although, even with that time I spent, I wasn't able to really get a full grasp of how intricate the combat is. So there's still a lot to learn and a lot to see. Another thing of note is that I actually died twice while I was playing the demos, which is weird because if you take, like, the last 20 years of Zelda games that have actually come out, I don't think I have died that many times in all of them combined. I think the last time I died in a Zelda game was probably in Ocarina of Time or maybe Majora's Mask, except in Triforce Heroes, because we died while we were playing that together, as I recall.
Yes, that's right. Constantly.
But with the exception of Triforce Heroes, yeah, I have not died in any other Zelda game in practically 20 years. So,
and how much did that set you back? Minimally, I'm guessing?
Well, one time I died right at the end of the demo, so I wasn't even able to respawn. It was right as my time ran out. I was trying to swim over to this dock area where there was a little raft. You might have seen the raft being shown in the treehouse demo.
Yep.
And I had the leaf to be able to blow it, so I tried to go over there and do that. But there was no pier, so I thought, well, I'll just swim over, but I either drowned or I froze to death in the icy water. Either way, I didn't make it, and I did not get to do that, and that was right as my demo ended, so that was the end of that. The other time, I came across an enemy encampment. That was one that was also in the treehouse demonstration, and there's it's the skull-shaped little hideout for the enemies, and if you know, shoot this lantern off the ceiling, it falls down and it burns the enemies and it blows up everything, and it's just a neat little way to get through that. I was not able to pull off that stunt quite as well. I shot the lantern that was on the ceiling, but I didn't shoot the rope, so it didn't fall down, it didn't break, but it did get the enemy's attention. And so they started coming out after me, and it's like, okay, well, I still see some barrels on the floor. I'll try to shoot those and just make them explode, but I wasn't able to hit them because the enemies kept coming out. I kept shooting the enemies instead. And then this big old green guy comes out, and he's like, okay, he looks a little tougher than these other enemies. I'll take him out. But he killed me in one hit. I didn't even get to do anything, and I was dead.
Yeah.
But when I respawned after that, it was very close by this enemy encampment. I decided, you know what? I don't really need to do that this badly. I think I'll continue on my mission and see what else I can do instead of dying here. So that was how it went. I didn't quite have the binoculars yet that would let you see, you know, how much HP the enemies have. So I wasn't really sure if I was going to get myself into trouble in some areas or not. But that's okay. I was still having fun with it. I was still enjoying it. I was still, you know, rolling boulders down on these other enemies to blow them up unsuspectingly. I was still doing all this sneaking around. Oh, and I was able to call in my wolf companion with the amiibo to have him help out.
Cool.
And that was fun as well.
Yeah. And the physics-based gameplay, how did it feel?
Well, for most of the important things, you know, that stuff was all kind of staged. The things would end up in the right places, more or less.
Yeah.
And I kind of prefer that in my video games because things can sometimes go really wonky when you're only relying on real physics. I didn't have any trouble with it when I was playing. I certainly have seen other people, you know, chop over a tree and try to run over the
And it
the
rolls
gap.
Away. Yeah. And that like, even happened like, in the
treehouse
demo.
It still collapses while they're trying to do that. Yeah.
That happened in the demo. So I'm assuming they're going to maybe make that a little better, but I don't know. Maybe they're all in on physics and shoot, you know, maybe just have to keep chopping down trees and get it right.
Yeah, you got to be in the right place. I did not have any issues with the trees causing me any trouble. And when I was trying to roll boulders to take out enemies, it usually went pretty well. Sometimes I didn't get all of them, but it would still do, you know, it would work fairly well. So as long as they, you know, make, you know, put things into the right positions where it's friendly for you to do this sort of thing, I don't think it'll be too much of a problem.
And what was the gamepad experience? What was happening on the second screen?
You know, I barely even looked at the second screen. I don't think it was doing much of anything. I kind of got the impression that might not be finalized yet, and they might not entirely know what they're doing with the second screen. Okay. And I think a lot of that has to do with the NX. Is the NX going to have a screen on the controller? And if it does, would it be the same? So maybe they don't want to make that integral to what this game is all about, which is kind of funny because when they started making it, when they first showed their first, you know, Zelda test demo footage like 4 years ago, it was like, okay, yeah, we want to make sure that we, you know, use Zelda to promote the gamepad usage to its fullest.
Yeah,
but no, it doesn't really seem to be doing anything. You know, it would be great if that's how you're able to do inventory management, because you do have to be switching between your gear and your weapons and the you know, the items, the magic items that you get. And as far as I know, there wasn't any special way to do that with the gamepad. It was all done with the D-pad and the right stick.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that was something that also took a little bit of getting used to. But yeah, I'm not worried about any of this. I think it's all going to become pretty second nature once people get their hands on the game.
Do you feel like you've spoiled the game for yourself a little bit by playing this demo and
looking at all the stuff?
Because I know there's some fans out there who probably intentionally avoided watching the Treehouse demo just because they want to, because it really is the first level of the game that you're looking at.
Well, it's the first area of the game.
The first area.
This game is going to be so vast, and there's so much to see and so much to explore. And apparently, they even might have removed some of the things from this demo. They're going to be there in the final game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not sure if that's really the case, but you know, there were some people saying that since there were things that are going to be in the final game that we couldn't experience in the demo, that might not necessarily mean they're there. But anyway, yeah, there's still a ton,
yeah.
a ton to see.
And this is a very futuristic-looking Zelda game. Like, I'm guessing the puzzles are going to have this kind of technology-centric...
I wouldn't say futuristic.
It's it's more technological than past Zelda games, it seems.
A little bit. I mean, I wouldn't call it futuristic at all. But yeah, the way that the aesthetics are done, it does have a bit of a technological slant to it. But that was present in Skyward Sword, and that was present in the Twilight aspect of Twilight Princess. Mm-hmm. So it feels like it's just sort of building upon you know, some of the aesthetics from those two games.
Okay. It looks great. It looks great. And I'm guessing this is, you know, this is the swan song of the Wii U, and hopefully it's, you know, a really great note to go out on.
Yeah, yeah, that seems to very much be the case. And apparently it's going to look even better on NX. Anuma said that while the gameplay experience will be exactly the same, the graphics are supposedly going to be upgraded for NX. So, yeah, that could be a good thing.
Yeah, I may avoid playing this until I have an NX to play it on. So if the NX is delayed, that means my Zelda game is going to be delayed for me, and I'll play Zelda when it hits the NX and not when it hits the Wii U, if those releases are staggered. How do you feel about that?
It sounds like they're trying to make the releases be as simultaneous as possible. I feel like maybe they could release the Wii U game this year if they wanted to, and I don't have, you know, any, you know, confirmed source that's telling me that or anything. That's just speculation on my part and the feeling I'm getting. But I think they really want to make them be simultaneous. But yeah, if they're the same game, but the NX version looks prettier, I see no reason to not go for that one.
And this game was the star of E3, for real. Like, not even coming from a Nintendo fanboy point of view.
Right, right.
It felt like this game was the it game at E3. Did it feel like that on the floor?
Yeah, it's the game that everybody was talking about there. That was like, you know, the one thing that you kind of had to see if you were at E3. People were lining up for hours and hours to be able to go into Nintendo's booth. And they had really nice, fancy booth. I'm sure they showed lots of pictures of it on the Treehouse stuff that was coming out of Nintendo. But boy, it was like their own little theme park there. You know, there's going to be these, you know, this Nintendo Universal theme park. This is like, you know, they're getting a head start right here. Because it was like, you know, almost a life-sized diorama with this big, you know, life-sized Link statue and life-sized Bokoblins. Is that who the bad guys are in this? I don't know. You never know what they're going to end up calling them in the final game. A big tower, meat on a spit, and food on a cooking pit that would dance around, and they had all these hidden pads in the floor, so if you stepped on certain places, you get special lighting effects or special sound effects. And then there was the special lighting with a day-night cycle, so it was just really, really extravagant. They went all out to make it a very fancy booth. And they also didn't make it, you know, really that compressed. If they'd had more TVs and stuff, they probably could have, you know, pulled even more people in there to see even more of the game. But I kind of like the fact that they made it a little more relaxed and atmospheric, and that really, you know, brought out the enjoyment more than if it had just been cramped wall to wall to wall with people.
Yeah, so, cool.
Yeah, I mean, before we went into E3, we were kind of thinking, you know, is Nintendo doing the right thing? Do they know what they're doing? Should they only be showing off one game like this? And well, at least for Zelda, it seems like it paid off. It was the talk of the show. And I think it's what most people are most looking forward to. So,
yep.
I can't wait to play more. I, like I said, feel like I barely saw anything, even in the time I played. And I'm just very, very excited. I'm very happy with the way it's going. And I am very much looking forward to finding out more about it and playing more in the coming months ahead.
Me too.
So, moving on from that one to another long-running and popular franchise, we shall say. The new Sonic Boom game, Sonic Boom Fire and Ice, featuring everybody's favorite hedgehog.
Yeah, you know, the last Sonic game that appeared at E3 was kind of a letdown. So is this going to be a letdown?
Well,
that was Sonic Boom, right?
Yeah, there were two Sonic Boom games. There was one for Wii U and there was one for 3DS. I never actually played the final games because I heard, you know, so many terrible things about them. But this is Sonic Boom Fire and Ice on the Nintendo 3DS, and I'm cautiously optimistic. So far, it kind of seems like a fairly fun, fairly traditional Sonic game.
Yeah, it looks kind of like, it reminds me of Donkey Kong Country a little bit.
Donkey Kong Country? Why do you say that?
Oh, just, you know, the 2.5D gameplay style.
So you mean like Donkey Kong Country Returns, huh?
It's Donkey Kong Country Returns, exactly.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I guess I can see that. But so far, it actually plays a lot like traditional Sonic the Hedgehog. It does have the fire and ice mechanic, which you switch between using the L and R buttons. So there are a lot of big chunks of ice in the game. There's a lot of water in the game. And, you know, if you want to go through ice, you have to switch to fire mode. If you want to turn water into ice, so it's a platform that you can run on, then you have to be quick to switch into ice mode. I think it's something that's going to become pretty quick and intuitive as you're playing the game. And in addition to switching between fire and ice modes to navigate the levels, you're also switching between five different characters. Obviously, Sonic, Tails, Knuckles, and Amy, and then Styx, who I don't even remember what Styx is. Is she a wildebeest? No. Wombat?
Sticks?
Probably not.
No, she's like a squirrel.
I'm not sure if she's a squirrel either. Anyway, she was a new character that's been introduced in Sonic Boom, and she is back in this game with her boomerang. And everyone's got different abilities. Sonic, of course, you know, is the fastest. He has a vertical air dash. Amy can smash stuff with her hammer. Tails can fly and hover naturally. Like I said, Sticks with the boomerang, and that can all be used to access different areas and things. But so far, it is a fairly traditional Sonic game in spite of all these extra trappings. And, you know, that can only be a good thing, really. They delayed it by almost a year. It was actually originally supposed to come out late last year, and now it's coming out late this year. So, if you're a Sonic fan, it's actually probably a game to look forward to.
Cool. I'm convinced. I think I might get this. I'm looking at it right now. It looks really nice.
Yeah, so far it seems pretty solid. I only played through one level and then a boss fight, but so far so good.
Even the bosses look like Donkey Kong Country Returns bosses, like that totem pole style, you know. Am I crazy? Am I crazy?
No. The aesthetic is a little bit tropical, so I can see why you're kind of reminded of some of the Donkey Kong Country Returns stuff. Yeah, that's not not off base. Styx is a badger, by the way. She is a
badger.
Badger. Yes.
All right.
Anyway, moving along to another 3DS game that I'm quite looking forward to. Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney, Spirit of Justice. I finally got to go hands-on with an English build of that game.
Have you played the Japanese version as a demo or something?
Yes, I have played the Japanese demo before. I know I've talked about it on the show before, although I can't remember if it was one that you were on.
I think it was. I just have a bad memory.
Okay. But, yeah, so I got to play this this demo in English, and it's basically the same thing that the Japanese eShop demo is, but actually with some parts taken out. Like, what I was telling you before about the Japanese demo is it had this really elaborate, really neat dance sequence leading up to the seance. And for some reason, that was not in this build of the game. It was just a little more streamlined, you know, probably so people could, you know, speed through the demo faster. But man, that part was so impressive. And that was easily the best part of the eShop demo. It's kind of sad that it was not in this version. So it was all very familiar territory to me. I kind of knew what to expect, but this was the first time I got to play it in English. And so I knew that there was a seance and that you see, you know, the visions of the dead. But I wasn't quite sure that I was presenting evidence to contradict not only the what was in the vision, but also contradictions between the vision and the prosecution's interpretation of the vision, because they don't always necessarily have the proper idea of what's going on. So it's your job to sort of clarify it and say, okay, this is what's really happening. Your interpretation is wrong.
I'm not real familiar with the Phoenix Wright games. Is this one of the first times they've delved into the supernatural in this kind of weird way?
Oh, no, not at all. It's actually part of the series since the beginning. It's all part and parcel of Ace Attorney. Your mentor in the first game is Mia Fey. She is your boss at your law firm. And it turns out that her family is also a bunch of spirit mediums. And, okay, spoiler alert, she gets killed really quickly. Yep. And her sister shows up to be your assistant, but she is a spirit medium. So, you know, her sister can come back to life through her, sort of, and she can channel other spirits of the dead on occasion. And it was, you know, a pretty important plot point throughout a lot of the game. And what you find out in this one is that, you know, a lot of it is set in this country called Kurian, I think. And that's supposedly where this whole spirit channeling thing that the Fey family is into, that's where it originated. So it's kind of delving into their backstory a lot. And that gives the excuse to bring back Mia Fey, your assistant, who has been absent from the last two games. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just expanding upon that stuff that was already around. It's a very spirited series, you can
say.
Yeah, nothing too unexpected there, but I was enjoying it, and you know, they also had a very cool booth at E3 set up kind of like a courtroom. There was a space for you to stand like you're a witness, and you can go up there, get your picture taken, and do your best pose of being exposed as a big, filthy liar. So. Also at the Capcom booth, they had Monster Hunter Generations.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to try that out. I had been kind of wondering why it was called Monster Hunter Generations and not Monster Hunter 5, and I finally got an answer to that question. It's because the game, which was known as Monster Hunter X in Japan, I believe, that was to celebrate the series' 10-year anniversary, so the X, the 10. And what it does is it reuses some of the maps and some of the monsters and some of the villages from previous Monster Hunter games. There's still a lot that's new. There are new fighting styles, and certainly the big Faded 4 monsters are all new. But yeah, there's actually a lot of stuff that comes from the previous games as sort of a way to celebrate the series' heritage.
Do you think that also makes it a good entry point for people new to the series?
You know, it probably would be. It probably would be. You know, I've dabbled in the series on and off over the years. I'm certainly not an experienced Monster Hunter veteran or anything. So I jumped into this, not really knowing what to expect. And boy, I was kind of overwhelmed very quickly. I did not make the right choices, I don't think. I wanted to try out some of these new fighting styles, so I picked this aerial attack style that will let you jump into the air and come down with these damaging strikes and hopefully even land on the monster and be able to start riding around on it. But I was having a lot of trouble doing it with any consistency. So I just felt like I was, you know, going in there and sometimes I would jump into the air and sometimes I would just do a little evasive roll. And sometimes I would land on the monster's back, and sometimes I would just, you know, land on the ground harmlessly. And I never really figured out what I was doing right or wrong in those cases. And after talking to a Capcom rep about it, it turns out that maybe I, you know, it wasn't my fault. There might actually just be some random element to it. But yeah, there's still a lot of stuff to figure out and master. I believe that the other people I was playing with must have known what they were doing, must be Monster Hunter veterans, because somehow we managed to win the fight despite me just, you know, flying around through the air, possibly not doing any good against the monster. But yeah, it's definitely a game that you need to learn and practice and become familiar with to be able to really thoroughly enjoy, I think. And that has not changed from past games. So I think if you like Monster Hunter, you will probably like this one.
So I know you were playing co-op online. Did you have any latency issues that you were experiencing there at the booth?
No.
I'm just going from my Triforce Heroes experience. Even playing locally, we were having some latency issues. Mm-hmm. Did any of that rear its ugly head?
Well, this was not online. This was local four-player co-op.
Oh, it was local. Okay. And did you have any latency issues at all there?
Not that I noticed. I did not notice any issues like that at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it seemed like a very solid experience technology-wise. Mm-hmm. Another 3DS game I got to check out was Harvest Moon Sky Tree Village.
Did you see your capybara?
Well, that's the wrong game.
Oh my gosh, you're right. That's
The capybara is Story of Seasons, Trio of Towns.
Yes. Oh my gosh, yeah. Same people, kind of.
Farming Mania is running wild.
Gotcha.
Not the same people. Different people.
It's
X-Seed
and the other one's Natsume?
Yes.
So,
well, since you brought up Story of Seasons, Trio of Towns, I'll go through that one first. Because it was all still in Japanese, I wasn't really able to do much other than wander around the villages. And I learned it's a very, you know, very big. There's lots to explore, lots to interact with. It's also, you know, very cute and pretty. Unfortunately, like you were asking about, I did not actually see any in-game capybaras. That's what I'm most excited about, is the new capybaras. There were capybaras on the artwork up on the booth wall. I took some pictures of them. Adorable capybaras.
Yeah, I saw that on your Twitter. Yep.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it was kind of hard to tell what was going on because it was not localized yet.
Oh, and how about Harvest Moon?
Yeah, that one, on the other hand, I was able to understand a lot more what was going on. And if you are a Harvest Moon fan, this certainly seems to be a step in the right direction. The visuals are better than the last game. They have improved the tools for modifying the landscape and for farming, just to make it more user-friendly. And of course, there is now a town in the game. Oh, plus another thing that they added was that, you know, I guess some people, you know, weren't really down with the 3D perspective of the last Harvest Moon. So they have it so you can easily switch into an overhead view and even use a strafe mode for easier farming if that's what you're into. You know, it's hard a little bit to compare the two games. You know, Harvest Moon Sky Tree Village is, you know, it's got this whole creative aspect where you can really, you know, change the landscape and has just lots of customization stuff. And it does seem to be improving upon the previous one. But Story of Seasons, you know, that series has been going for quite a long time. And it seems that it's very, very extensive this time out. Three villages, as implied by the Trio of Towns subtitle. And just a whole crap load of stuff to do. Just seems very, very big. And, of course, it has capybaras. So
if you had to pick one of those two farming sim games, Which one?
I don't think I can answer that question properly. Not yet.
We'll have to wait for the English translation, the localized version.
Yes. Also, over at Natsume, I got to play a little bit of a River City Tokyo Rumble.
Yeah, how was that?
It seemed like a nice, solid little beat-em-up. I just ran around and kicked and punched a few people, picked up the guy's body that was lying around, spun him around, threw him into his friends, just having a nice little time, cute punching out people. Didn't really make a whole lot of progress, but yeah, it certainly seemed very solid. Unfortunately, I learned that there is no co-op mode. For story mode, it's just single player. I guess you could have a partner character controlled by the CPU helping you out, which was also the case in the last River City game that was released on Game Boy Advance. There are versus modes. There are competitive modes for up to four players. There's a rumble mode, which is just a four-player, brawl. And then there is a dodgeball mode, which is, of course, a tribute to Super Dodgeball on the NES, which is part of the same series.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, two-player co-op was one of the best things about the original River City Ransom, I thought. And yeah, this is only single player for the story mode, which is kind of unfortunate.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's going to have lots of shops, lots of weapons, lots of customization stuff that the original River City Ransom had. And so I'm still looking forward to it quite a bit.
So I just saw there's news of a physical release on this one. Is that a rumor? Is that true? Did you see that?
I'm almost positive it is a physical release for River City Tokyo Rumble.
Okay, cool. Because apparently it was originally digital only, and then they decided to go physical. I don't know.
I'm not sure. I always got the impression it was going to be physical, but they showed me that they're working on a pre-order bonus that you'll get when you pre-order in the store. It's a Kunio keychain featuring the hero of the River City series. And obviously they would not be giving out pre-order bonuses if it were only a digital release, I think. So I believe physical release is a certainty at this point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything we've been talking about so far, I think, is physical and digital release, with the exception of poor Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney, Spirit of Justice. That one is still digital only, I'm sad to say.
Yep.
But speaking of games that are both physical and digital, over at the XSEED booth, I got to play some Shantae Half Genie Hero. That was supposed to be a digital release, but then XSEED stepped in and they're like, hey, we're doing the physical release. Check it out. Enjoy it. And so far, the game is coming along really, really well. It's smooth. It's beautiful. It's, kind of traditional as far as Shantae games go. The opening level is usually Shantae running through Scuttletown and fighting off some sort of invasion. And that was the case here. But yeah, just all moved so smoothly and looked so beautiful. I'm still having, quite a tremendous time, even though it's, not that different from what we've seen before. You're still able to transform. Actually, the transformations are a lot easier than they were in the past games. Before, you had to hold down a dance button and, shake your hips the right number of times and then release to transform into whatever form you wanted to change into. But this time, you hit the button, you select a direction to change your form, and poof, you're a monkey now. You're a spider now. Just seemed a lot more user-friendly in that regard. Of course, early on, mostly just going to be using your hair whip to take out the bad guys. And there was, of course, a giant mechanized boss at the end, helmed by the evil pirate lady, Risky Boots. And this time, her big, clunky machine was called the Poop Toot, I believe. Or the Poop Shoot? No, Poop Toot. So, yeah, the game still has some the humor that it is known for as well. So,
did you back this on Kickstarter?
I did.
I did.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I'm happy to say that so far it's coming along well.
It's going
to
be a game.
Yeah. I mean, WayForward pretty much always delivers. I have every bit of faith in them. They've done lots of great games in the past. So I'm not terribly surprised that this is still looking good. Also, over at the XSEED booth was Exile's End, which is coming to Wii U, courtesy of those folks. And I know we talked a little bit about this the last time that we were doing a podcast together. And this is the one where it's sort of inspired by Out of This World and Flashback. And I said it was sounding kind of Metroid-y. And you're like, no. I went to the Steam page and it's not, they say it's not that kind of game at all.
Yeah, it literally said it, this is not a Metroidvania, but...
Well, I played the game. It is totally a Metroid game.
Oh, no.
It totally is.
Oh, no.
It completely is. It's got the whole Metroid-style map system and the whole nonlinear exploration thing. It is completely a Metroid-type game. I don't have a whole lot else to say about it because I didn't play a ton, and the area I played was sort of very monochromatic, a lot of gray. Didn't get into any boss fights or anything. So I was exploring, just shooting bad guys, throwing rocks at bad guys, occasional hand grenade. But, you know, that kind of formula generally works pretty well, and it controlled well. And incidentally, I played this one for a little bit on PS4 before switching over to the Wii U version. And I'm not sure why, but the Wii U version just felt so much better to play. It just was smoother and more responsive and more natural. And I don't know if that's how it's going to be in the final release. But in this case, it's kind of looking like the Wii U version might be the superior game. So kind of crazy, huh?
That's really cool. I mean, I would prefer to play it that way. I don't have a lean back experience on my Mac. So yeah, that's cool. It looks great. It looks like a game I would play. So I'm excited for this one.
The last game I played at the XSEED booth was Corpse Party, and I kind of knew what I was going to be getting with that one because I have played through that one on PSP. For those who haven't played it, it's a 2D, sort of cute-looking, top-down, you almost want to call it an RPG because it is kind of like an old-school top-down RPG, horror RPG, but there aren't any random battles or anything like that, so... I guess just you could call it an adventure game, a top-down adventure game. And yeah, it's still extraordinarily creepy, despite what the cute graphics might imply. It's disgusting, and there's new content. I got to play one of the new bonus chapters in the game. It wasn't very long. I didn't really feel like I would have missed anything if I had never played this extra chapter. But it's only one of several additional chapters, and so I'm still thinking that I'll probably pick this up so I can see all the new content and the upgraded old content when this game comes out on 3DS.
I'm gonna get this. I should probably own a PSP, or a PSV. Do you play this on PS Vita? You said.
I did. It is a PSP game, but I played it on my Vita.
You played it on your Vita. I see.
I mean, it's definitely not for everybody. It's very much an acquired taste, and it's, rated M for a reason. But, I think that it's pretty neat if that's the kind of thing you are going for. Speaking of other M-rated games, I played a little bit of Shin Megami Tensei IV Apocalypse over at Atlas's booth. And I wish I had a whole lot of great insights into this game, but... sometimes it's really, really hard to demo an RPG at E3. In fact, when I say sometimes, I mean almost always. It's hard because an RPG, it's something you want to sit down and you really want to get invested with and you want to spend your time. But E3, it's like, okay, jump in here, check out this game as fast as you can, then move on to the next thing. And so I basically just spent my time going through the first dungeon and fighting a bunch of battles. And, where does it go from there? It's really hard to say. What I did learn about it is that it's going to have two new difficulty modes that could be very appealing depending on what kind of player you are. There is Apocalypse difficulty, which is supposed to be super, super, super difficult. Shin Megami Tensei is already known for being incredibly hard, but Apocalypse is supposed to be, like the hardest of all. I guess that's why it's in the title. But then there's also supposed to be a mode called Paradise, which is going to be a free DLC mode, and that's supposed to be a super easy mode. So if you've stayed away from the series before because it's too difficult and too frustrating, maybe this will finally be your excuse to sit down and play it.
They want, you know, they want to make it a little more welcoming to newer RPG fans, JRPG players.
Yes, exactly. More inviting, more welcoming, bring in that new audience.
There's a lot. I mean, it strikes me how many 3DS games are on your list here and how few Wii U games. And that's kind of been the story of the Wii U, I guess, over the past 3+ years. Were you disappointed? Obviously, the 3DS is my console of choice, so I'm not disappointed here. But I can imagine a little bit of disappointment for Wii U owners who are still want to squeeze out a little bit more value and fun out of this console that's notorious for collecting dust.
Yeah, you're totally not wrong. I mean, I wouldn't say there were a lot of 3DS games. I mean, I felt like I had to really search under every nook and cranny to find the 3DS stuff. And, you know, a lot of companies, you know, didn't have anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, Wii U, there was almost nothing there. Obviously, Zelda was the hit of the show, and that's Wii U.
Yep.
But other than that, there was the stuff at XSEED, Exile's End, which is only digital, and then Shantae, which was only going to be digital, but it's also physical. And I guess there was one other game I'll be getting to in a little bit. We know that Paper Mario is still coming down the road.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, things are going to be really, really lean for the next several months for Wii U owners. It's going to be really, really tough. Hopefully there's, you know, a lot more stuff coming digitally maybe that we don't know about, or maybe they've still got a surprise or two up their sleeve. But I feel like if there was anything, they would have been shown it on the treehouse, because things are looking really bleak. It's obvious they have completely shifted their focus away from Wii U over to NX and to 3DS as well, I suppose.
Yeah. Maybe they're just trying to give you a chance to catch up on your backlog.
Yes, I do have a massive backlog. So
we were playing Wind Waker this weekend, which I still haven't finished on the Wii U. So we are getting through that backlog slowly but surely.
Let's see. The other game that I was playing at the Atlas booth was Seventh Dragon 3, Code VFD. And like Shin Megami Tensei, you know, it's an RPG. It's a little hard to demo at the show. And all I was able to do, once again, was go through this early dungeon. It seems fairly traditional. It seems solid. I enjoy what I played. And it does have some cool aspects to the combat. One of the things I liked about it is that it had stuff that you'd set up in one turn of your battle and then you could follow up on in the next turn. Like, there was one character who could hack enemies. So he would do his hacking the first turn, which doesn't do anything. But then the second turn, he was able to follow up on that and, you know, like make the bad guy turn against the other bad guys, or maybe cause the bad guy to heal you or do things of that nature. So that was kind of cool. And there was another character who had like a punch attack. And if you did that, then you could follow it up with a stronger punch attack the next turn. And then you could finish it off on the following turn with, you know, like a combo closer attack. So it had some neat aspects in battle that I was able to check out even in the short time I played. So so I was kind of digging that. I don't know. I guess if I could only choose one of those two games, I probably would go with Seventh Dragon over Shin Megami Tensei 4. But I suppose I'm partially saying that just because I haven't really been into the Shin Megami Tensei series that much.
Yeah, nor have I. I don't play a lot of JRPGs, period. So.
Oh, well, here's a Wii U game. You know, we're just talking about how there weren't any Wii U games, and this one wasn't shown on Wii U at the show. I actually played it on Xbox One, but that is Bloodstained: Ritual of the Night. It is supposed to be coming out on the Wii U as well as every other system under the sun. Of course, that is the Castlevania game that's not actually Castlevania that's coming to us from Koji Igarashi. And let me tell you, so far it is shaping up really, really great. If you like all those Castlevania games that were on GBA and DS, I mean, this just follows in that pattern perfectly. If someone had said to me, yes, this is a Castlevania game, I would have been like, oh, okay, yeah, totally plays like one. I totally believe this. Sure, why not? So, yeah, it's just totally what you'd expect from, you know, that exploration-style Castlevania game.
So there was a playable demo there.
Yes, like I said, only for Xbox.
Only for Xbox, yeah.
Yes, it was there, and Ego was right there next to it. I got to say hi to him.
That's
cool.
Got
to shake his hand.
Yeah.
I did not get to give him a hug like I'd been meaning to ever since he got fired from Konami.
Mm-hmm.
But he seemed to be doing pretty well even without my hug, so I decided it might not be necessary at this point.
I think he's got dollar bills to try his tears with. Did you back this game on Kickstarter? This is a Kickstarter game as well.
Yes, and I did back this also. So once again, I am happy that it is shaping up
well. Yeah, a lot of Kickstarter success stories here.
Mm-hmm. And then the last game I wanted to mention seeing at E3 was the new update to LEGO Dimensions. Now, the news about this broke almost 2 weeks ago now, and what we found out is that there is not going to be a LEGO Dimensions 2. There's just going to be lots of new add-on content for the game coming this fall. And, you know, I stood in line, I watched the theater presentation, you know, I saw what's coming. Really, what matters is that LEGO Dimensions is now going to have Mr. T. They have the A-Team license, and
wow.
So B.A. Baracus, looking pretty much exactly like Mr. T.
That's surprising.
Is in the game,
just
along with the A-Team
video. I don't see this game as a game for adults, and I don't think kids even know. I mean, I don't think they know who Mr. T is anymore.
How dare you say such a thing?
I kind of think
they are trying to appeal to parents.
Oh, okay.
They want
parents
to get into this and play with
all
the kids.
Right.
Like, oh, yeah, I recognize these properties. But whatever the reason, they've gone nuts. They've, like, grabbed every freaking license under the sun.
Yeah, I mean, Goonies is throwback. You've got Knight Rider.
Yeah, let's just go down the list.
Yeah.
Aside from the all-important A-Team starring Mr. T, we've got the new Ghostbusters movie, which is going to be a big add-on pack. But then, yeah, The Goonies, Harry Potter, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, Adventure Time, which, of course, you know, not a throwback one.
No, that's...
LEGO City Undercover, the you know, that was the Wii U and 3DS game. Mission Impossible, which might be the weirdest one of all.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
The LEGO Batman movie, Teen Titans Go.
That's real specific. The LEGO Batman movie. All right.
As you mentioned, Knight Rider. You know, E.T., the 80s movie E.T., The Extra Testicle.
Yep. I see what you did there.
You're letting me get away with that?
I'm going to let you get away with that.
E.T., The Extraterrestrial, Powerpuff Girls, Gremlins, Beetlejuice, and Sonic the Hedgehog.
Sonic. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's another video game crossover there. So, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of LEGO games. I have not bought LEGO Dimensions up until this point, but you better believe that I am going to get it so I can play as B.A. Baracus.
Well, you could just buy the little LEGO pack. You don't have to buy the game.
It's true. I could just buy it and be content with my little A-Team van, my little B.A.
And I really think that's what they're going for here. I don't think they're expecting to sell more games with these. I think they're just looking to sell these LEGO sets, to be honest.
Well, they could just sell them as LEGO sets if they wanted to.
That they are. I mean, you can buy these as LEGO sets, right? All of these.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't have to. Well, I mean, these all will exist as
LEGO
just LEGO sets, yes.
Yeah,
but...
LEGO sets with the game like functionality.
Right, right. But up until now, you know, we haven't seen the Goonies in LEGO form.
Yep.
We haven't seen you know, Gremlins or Beetlejuice in LEGO form. But yeah, now it's all going to be there. And as I said before, I think they are trying to just, you know, bring in adults who, you know, want to, you know, play the game with their kids. I think that's what they're going for here.
Yeah.
Or maybe they've just lost their mind. I don't know.
They know what they're
doing.
Yeah.
I did talk to the producer a little bit. I said, tell me, man, are you going to get Mr. T to do the voiceover for his character? And what I found out is they sort of appear to be working on it. They have not made any decisions yet, but they are apparently looking into getting Mr. T to actually do the voiceover for B.A. Baracus.
That's pretty cool.
I'm not going to, you know, hold my breath. I'm not sure it's going to happen. You know, Mr. T, he can be very picky about what his projects are. So I could see him sitting this out. But still, it's cool that it could still be a possibility. So that would be pretty awesome. That'd be beyond awesome. It would be terrific.
Well, I'm going to buy some of these Lego kits. I am not buying that game, but I'm going to buy some of these Lego kits.
Yeah, I'm going to buy I'll get the game now. I'll be playing as B.A. Baracus. I'll probably get the Sonic the Hedgehog one as well. But yeah, they totally got me. I never would have bought this before, but I'm totally been suckered in. So yeah, that was pretty much all the stuff I saw at the show that was Nintendo related. But there were a few other things that Nintendo talked about or showed on their online presentation that I suppose we ought to cover.
Yeah, what were those things?
Well, the first one was the unveiling of a brand new Egyptian-themed action RPG called Ever Oasis. Did you see this one online?
No, I completely missed it.
Ah, okay.
It doesn't really sound that exciting, so sell it.
Hey, I'm not here to sell these games.
Sell me on this game, Christopher Hoffman.
Here's the first thing that might sell you on. It is Persian-themed, from Rezo.
The Persian-themed action RPG, I'm just...
Egyptian-themed. Egyptian-themed action RPG. You are creating your own oasis. It has real-time combat, so you know, you're going out and exploring and collecting the things that you need to build up your oasis. But I think the big selling point isn't necessarily that. I think the thing that might get you intrigued is that this is from Grezzo, the guys that did the remakes of Majora's Mask and Ocarina of Time 3D.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah.
So these guys know what they're doing, mm-hmm. and now they're coming out with an original game with the real-time combat, three party members, switch between them at any time. You know, the video footage they showed included beating up some really cool-looking giant scorpion guys that I can only assume were boss monsters. But yeah, the theme of the game is to create a prosperous oasis. You know, you're recruiting villagers and adding new shops and things of that nature. So it's certainly not your typical action RPG, but it has a good developer pedigree, and so you know, I'm somewhat interested in this.
And I take it back, I did see this. I think I even tweeted about it. It looks cool.
All right, glad to see you're coming around so
quickly. It looks cool. It's cute. It looks cute, and it's a 3DS game. That's 90% of the way to selling me.
Okay, now what about the other new announcement, Mario Party Star Rush?
I don't like Mario Party games anymore. I'm sorry. I can't. I even own the Wii U Mario Party game, and we played it once. I might just be burned out on the Mario Party. But somebody out there is probably excited for this one, but not me.
Well, I can understand why you say that. Mario Party is certainly not as exciting as it used to be, and they've always had a real hard time with it. On handhelds especially, it just seems like it, you know, the first Mario Party on handhelds, Mario Party Advance, that one I thought was pretty terrible. It was only single player. What were they thinking? Anyway, yeah. So it started badly, and ever since then I don't feel like they've ever really had a great handheld Mario Party game. But there is some new additions to this one that perhaps could fix some of the problems. And sort of the big deal is that this time all players are rolling the dice and playing simultaneously. So no more waiting around. Other people are doing their thing.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see how that mechanic actually works. It sounds like it's a race to get to your move and, you know, move on.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how it works either. But I do think that's going to, you know, alleviate some of the issues. On the other hand, one of the things that was, you know, appealing about Mario Party is that you get to play as all your favorite Mario characters. I can be Luigi, or Wario, or Princess Peach, or whoever. And now everyone has to play as Toad?
Wait,
really?
Really? Everybody has to play as Toad?
Everyone has to play as Toad, yeah. So the other characters are just sitting around on the board somewhere. You know, that's where you'll find Mario, and Donkey Kong, and Yoshi, and Peach. And I guess when you touch them on the board, they become your allies, and they'll somehow help you out. But really, you're just playing as Toad. Which kind of seems weak to me.
Weird. That is really bizarre.
Plus, there doesn't appear to be any online mode either. So this
is local play only?
Yeah, local play only. We'll have download play, so it's not like everyone has to have a copy of the game. But yeah. Local only, no online, and you're playing as Toad.
Wow. That's a tough sell. And it's Mario Party, and that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, some of these mini games are inspired and but they don't all, it's not like you can front load all your favorite mini games into this, and sometimes there are some yawners and weird ones, and you just kind of have to play through it. And
yeah, it's all really going to come down to what the mini games are like, if they're fun, and also if this simultaneous gameplay system works. So I guess we'll have to see. At any rate, it's coming out on November 4th. Oh, and on that same day, we are getting new Mario Amiibo.
Based on what?
Well, I guess it's, to go along with this game, it's the Super Mario series. There was a series already that had six characters in it. Mario, Luigi, Peach, Bowser, Toad, and Yoshi. And now we're getting Series 2 with Wario, Waluigi, Daisy, Rosalina, Donkey Kong, Diddy Kong, and Boo.
All right. Which Boo? King Boo?
Just regular Boo, I believe. But he glows in the dark, so that's pretty cool.
All right. King Boo. And we have Daisy, finally.
Yeah, and it's the first Waluigi as well.
Yeah, and so we actually had a coworker at the last place we worked at, and she had modded Peach to look like Daisy with some paint.
Oh yeah, so that's right. But yeah, now we're actually getting an official one, so it's pretty cool to see those characters getting amiibo releases, and I am looking forward to all those more than I'm looking forward to Mario Party Star Rush. I will say that much.
Yeah, I'm probably not picking that one up, but it looks good, man. I wish it weren't a Mario Party game, but.
Okay, now what about this one? What about Box Box Boy?
So Box Box Boy, remind me again, Box Box Boy, because I did hear some rumblings online about Box Box Boy.
Well, it's the sequel to Box Boy.
Oh, this is okay.
A sequel came out in Japan a while ago, a few months back, I think, and for some reason it hadn't been released in the U.S. yet. And I was like, well, why isn't it out here yet? What are they waiting for? What's going on? Well, we're getting it next week.
So this is this is only on the 3DS, right? This isn't a game that was ported from the PC, right? Box Boy.
That is correct. Yeah. I mean, Box Boy came out on 3DS a while back. Mm-hmm. It got, great critical acclaim. A lot of people I know really like it. And yeah, we're getting the sequel very soon. It's from the folks at HAL. It's got 120 levels, and it'll be out in about a week from the time that we're recording this.
That's awesome.
Did you play the original Box Boy?
I didn't. I probably played the demo. And I have so many games on my backlog that I haven't even delved into the indie titles on the 3DS eShop, which is a sin, I know. So I only have a handful of indie titles, but like Shovel Knight and stuff. But yeah, Box Boy, it looks great. I'm certain I played the demo. I probably should pick this up as well.
Yeah, I'd be willing to give this one another shot. People speak so highly of the original Box Boy. I played it a little bit and just really wasn't able to get into it. But then again, I hear that it gets way, way better as you proceed. That the first world or two are very basic, but after that, it gets really, really good. And so, yeah, I should give that another chance. Or maybe I should just go straight to Box Box Boy when it comes out in the very, very near future. And one other downloadable-only title. I guess I should have said that Box Box Boy is only a download title coming out on the eShop. But another downloadable game I wanted to mention that came out of the E3 announcements is Severed. It is a first-person hack-and-slash from Drinkbox Studios, the guys that made Guacamelee. Are you familiar with this one at all?
Yes, that's a good pedigree. I'm not. This is the first time I'm hearing of it. And it's got the same, at least color palette as Guacamelee. It's got that South American vibe.
Yeah, it's got a very interesting art style.
Central American vibe.
Yeah, and I had heard about this game for quite a while, but really I didn't know much about it other than the name, other than that it was called Severed, and it was from Drinkbox Studios. So now that I see it's coming out on Wii U and 3DS, I'm like, wow, why wasn't this the first system that it was coming to? Because it just seems so touchscreen centric. Like you're swiping your sword, swiping your stylus like a sword on the touchscreen. You're doing environmental interactions with the touchscreen. It just seems like a completely natural fit for the Wii U gamepad and for the 3DS. So I think there's going to be a very good home for this game. Plus, it's cross-buy. You buy one version, you get the other. So that's pretty cool of the folks at Drinkbox to do that.
Yeah, that's really great.
But yeah, it's coming out this summer. And like I said, I think that Nintendo consoles will be a good place to play this one. All right, well, that covers everything that I wanted to discuss coming out of E3. So let's take a little intermission, and when we come back, we will talk about new game releases and some other exciting Nintendo news. All right, we are back, and since E3 was our big topic, we're just going to discuss the latest releases and some other news. And the first new release I want to talk about is Kirby Planet Robobot. Scott, did you pick this one up?
No, I haven't picked it up yet. Yeah, I say yet because I definitely have it on my list. It's definitely something I'm going to buy. But is it good?
It seems pretty good so far. I haven't had a lot of opportunity to play it because been out of town, been busy, mm-hmm. been working. So I've only really played through the first world, but it's just so very, very charming. I mean, it's Kirby, so you yeah. kind of know what you're getting out of Kirby, and it's very similar to the last game in the way that it uses the 3D effects to hop between, you know, the foreground and the background. But I just love the aesthetic. I love that it has sort of this, steampunk style robot invasion. The robots are all, you know, clunky gears and motors, not super high tech at all. And I just think it's kind of adorable. And in the parts I've played, you know, nothing about it has been particularly challenging, but I guess that's also kind of a Kirby trademark. They don't try to beat you over the head with the difficulty. So I've just been running through, you know, eating up enemies and getting various powers and then jumping in that gorgeous pink robot walker that looks like it came right out of Mega Man X and doing more stuff with more robot powers. And yeah, not really anything to complain about so far. It's just been fun stuff.
Cool. I think it looks like a lot of fun. I definitely had it on my list. It has amiibo functionality, right?
Yes, that's right. There are the 4 new amiibo that came out alongside the game. And I haven't had a ton of time to play around with them in the game. I did scan in Meta Knight, and I was able to get some new Meta Knight sword powers to help me through a level. Apparently, one of them is a UFO ability, and it's supposed to be like super cool and super powerful, but I actually haven't had a chance to try that out yet. But speaking of the amiibo, yes, I did pick all those up. And they are nice and cute. Every time I talk about Kirby, that's just kind of the word that comes to mind. Cute, adorable, because he is. He's a pink puffball.
And you got the diorama for this? Did those come? Did you get those?
Yes, I also got the diorama from Japan. Yes. So I got all the amiibo. I got the diorama. Before I get into the diorama, I guess I should mention that of the new Kirby amiibo, boy, it's really hard to pick a favorite, but one of the things that I'm really impressed by is just how huge King Dedede is, because he was pretty honking big in Smash Brothers, and this one's even bigger than the Smash Brothers amiibo. Kirby is more dynamic than his Smash amiibo, and he has a cool little star base that's nice, and Waddle Dee is a brand new character, so I'm also glad to have that one, and his display stand is kind of like a magical cloud fart, so that's kind of nifty. I guess the only one that I don't like better than the Smash counterpart is Meta Knight, because he doesn't have his wings out. He has his cape instead. Mm-hmm. And so even though this one's bigger, I think I do prefer the old one. But still, they're all pretty nice. And I wish I had as many good things to say about this diorama. Because,
yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it should be really cool, and in some ways it is. But the add-on parts, for one thing, they are cardboard, not plastic. With the Smash Brothers one, there was the Smash Ball accessory, and that came on, you know, nice clear plastic, and that was, you know, seemed to be of quality. In this one, it has more add-on parts, like a block pile, an exit door, maximum tomato, some little hills, but they're just, you know, perforated cardboard, just cardboard cutouts that you assemble, and that seems just a little chintzier than I was hoping for. But worse than that, it's just that the one I got was really banged up and bent and damaged and indented.
Man. Yeah.
And, you know, when you're just getting something through the mail like this, there's not much you can do to avoid it. It's a real crapshoot.
And it's such an inexpensive item that it's not worth returning.
Yeah, you do kind of get what you pay for, I suppose. This one has the indentations for the amiibo as well, so I was digging that. But yeah, it's just all kind of bent up and not quite as nice as I would hope for. So I don't really want to, you know, knock the product for that, other than that it's just sort of, you know, cheaply made. You know, it was only like $12 or something, and I guess I got my money's worth. But yeah, it would have been so much cooler if it were not all bent up.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would have been nice. Now here's another new release, controversial new release, just came out today as we're doing this recording. Mighty Number 9 is finally here. Can you believe it?
I cannot believe it. And not for me, because I selected 3DS as my platform, so I'm going to be waiting. And I'm not giving them any more money. So, yeah.
No, you shouldn't.
No, I didn't get my reward either.
Yeah, they are continuing to sort of slap their backers in the face with this. You know, they gave it out to, you know, all the outlets and reviewers and everything before it hit retail, but if you're a backer, no, you don't get it until the retail version comes out, which didn't, you know, really seem like the best way to handle things, considering everything else that's happened with this this Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah.
But yeah, now it is out, and people are really saying horrible things about it.
Oh man, what's wrong with it?
Well, apparently it's a little bit buggy. Okay. Apparently it crashes sometimes.
Oh boy, okay.
But I've only played the first level of the Wii U version,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think it's nearly as bad as everybody's making it out to be. Maybe it'll get, you know, problematic later on, but so far it kind of does seem like a fun Mega Man game.
Wow, all right.
I will definitely say that it has load times. Really, really bad load times. Ooh,
on a digital download, load times.
Yes.
Ooh, okay. I mean,
like from the title screen, the first thing I did was I went to the options menu. And even that was like, what, like a 20-second load time for the options screen? It didn't make any sense at all.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, so that really sucked. And then I was playing the first level and I, you know, missed a jump and I died. Then I had to load that up. And that took forever as well. So there are definitely some issues, but on the other hand, the actual gameplay seems fairly good. The shooting and jumping and dashing and air dashing and chaining together the attacks, and at least on this first level, the level design seemed you know, very competent.
And you had played a demo of this at a previous E3, right? Last year?
Yeah, I played it last year.
So how does this compare to that demo?
Well, I believe it was the same level I played, but when I played it, it was on Xbox One.
Okay.
And, you know, it's been too long. I can't tell you if this looks the same or that one looked better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess that it probably looked better on Xbox One, but, you know, it's been a whole stinking year, so I don't know. Oh, and the music also seemed good on that first level.
All right.
But, you know, obviously the first level, that's just a warm-up, not too challenging.
So not all bad news, but I still haven't gotten my free, I paid like $50 and I think I'm supposed to get like a fake Famicom box and it didn't come. yet, and they have my address like 8 times over. So please tweet at me if you got yours and I just didn't get mine.
Yeah, I mean, they continue to do things very wrong with this Kickstarter. I mean, it started off amazing, and then they have just, you know, wronged backers in so many ways, and these late rewards are just part and parcel with that, I guess.
I feel like this is going to hurt future Kickstarters, not just for Comcept, but for anyone who says, you know, this is the spiritual successor to this game that the developer is never going to make, but we're going to make it, or the publisher's never going to make, but we're going to make it, you know, anyway. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny that we're talking about, you know, them having all these troubles with Mighty No. 9. And earlier on, we had the Bloodstained Ritual of the Night game I was talking about from EGA.
Yeah.
And, you know, so far that one is shaping up really well. But, you know, I thought the same thing about Mighty No. 9 last year. So
yeah, I think
it's hard to say.
I feel like my inclination is now to watch these from the sideline and see how they progress without investing money in it. And I know that sounds really, like, cynical, but I'd almost prefer to be surprised by a game like this Bloodstained game that looks incredible. I didn't give them $80, but, you know, I'll give them $30, $50 when it hits the platform of my choice. But I don't know if I'm going to be in it for $80 or $100 to get whatever this reward is, if it's a CD or if it's downloadable soundtrack or if it's a poster or a t-shirt. I mean, I understand wanting to, you know, support the creators and I'm all for it, but honestly, I think a lot of these people are having trouble delivering these the actual reward items, the hard like things like t-shirts and posters. These people are good at making games. I don't necessarily know how good they are at getting me a statue of the player from the game. So I'd rather pay them for the game they make than for a t-shirt that I may never get. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, well, that's understandable, especially given that there definitely are issues with Mighty No. 9. I'll have to keep playing it and see what else pops up. But, you know, my takeaway is kind of, it's not perfect, not even close to perfect, but I also don't think it's nearly as bad as some people would like to make it out to be.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the complete and total utter garbage that some folks might say.
Yeah, yeah.
But well, it's also still a far cry from what I wanted, so.
I'm not going to let my not getting my reward in the mail yet color my judgment of this game. I'm going to play it and see how it is.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Hey, but speaking of Kickstarter games, there was an update about Shovel Knight just recently.
I didn't even know about this. I'm so excited about this, so I'm downloading this tonight.
Well, it's not out yet.
Oh, damn you.
This is stuff that we knew was coming. This is stuff that, you know, when they did the original Kickstarter campaign, they said, hey, there's going to still be more campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we got the Plague Knight campaign a while back. But now they've started unveiling the Spectre Knight campaign. That is another boss character that is now going to be a playable character and is going to get, you know, his own campaign treatment. And we've been waiting on this for a while. We're also still waiting on King Knight. That's going to be another campaign, as well as some other additional modes, such as gender swap mode. But right now, they came out, we're talking about Spectre Knight mode. And this is the character that inhabited the graveyard. He's got his scythe to chop you up. He was one of the more challenging bosses early on, I thought. But yeah, they were showing that he uses his scythe slash as well as a dashing slash attack. And he can climb the walls. So looks like it's going to be a fun, interesting character. And I'm glad to see they're making progress on that.
This is one of those games I bought twice. I do have the physical version of Shovel Knight because I love this game so much, so...
Yep, I did the same. I
doubled up.
Yeah, I had to get it. Man, that manual is just so beautiful. They don't do them like that anymore. So it was worth it paying another $20 just for that alone.
Yeah, and I really wanted to support them. And honestly, if they sell them, I'll buy the t-shirt. I'll buy the amiibo. I'll buy whatever they make with the Shovel Knight character on it. I'm sold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are an example of Kickstarter gone right. So even though you look at something like Mighty No. 9 and says, boy, they kind of dropped the ball with this, you can look back at Shovel Knight and be like, yes, this is an example of how you do it right.
Yep.
So, The one last bit of news I wanted to mention is that there is a new Metroid collectible coming out. There is a Zero Suit Samus Figma action figure being released over in Japan.
Wow, I didn't know about this.
I did. I knew about it a long time ago. I remember seeing pictures of it, seems like years ago. And then I totally forgot about this thing. And hey, it apparently is going to finally be coming out in January of next year.
But that's, is this a posable Figma?
Yes, yes it is.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah, you know, they did a regular Samus
in her
outfit. Yeah, that's right.
I have the first one, and then they sold out, and then they made more, so you can actually buy it again if you missed out.
Yeah, they've also done Link. They've done Pit from Kid Icarus. They recently did Lucina from Fire Emblem. And, we're finally going to be getting this long-awaited Zero Suit Samus. Technically, it is Samus from Metroid Other M, and, you know, that game, obviously very controversial, but, you know, whatever. Who cares? It's Samus, you know, Zero Suit Samus in action figure form. Totally posable. And I think it's going to be a great addition to the collection.
Yeah, it's so well made. At first glance, it doesn't even look like a posable figure. It looks like, you know, molded that way.
Hmm.
Just by my eye. I think maybe because the joints are kind of Samus's suit. So, yeah, cool figure.
Yeah, I pre-ordered mine from Big Bad Toy Store. So if you're interested, you can go on there. And there's other places that have it as well.
The Good Smile people really make beautiful figures. They'll have multiple hands, multiple weapons, multiple faces that you can swap out. So I have no doubt that this Figma has all those things. And
yeah, this one definitely comes with her pistol, and I've seen a picture of it with the helmet that she carries out at the end of Other M. So yeah, this will definitely have all those accessories and things that we've come to expect from the Figmas.
And two different hairstyles.
Oh, that's right.
At least two different hairstyles. Posable hairstyles.
All right. Well, this show is kind of running a little bit long, so I guess we should wrap it up. But before we go, we've still got time for a dramatic reading. This time from the back of the box of the fairly obscure Super NES game, Mr. Nuts. This is no time to hibernate, Mr. Nuts. Yeti, the abominable snow beast, is about to put a chill on the entire planet. It's up to you to put the freeze on this cold-hearted creature. Grab your acorn stash and embark on a puzzling adventure through the freaky forest, a maze-filled volcano, a zany street carnival, and use your mighty tail to stomp purple plum heads, squirrel-eating slugs, and bumbling bees. Only you, Mr. Nuts, can save the planet from becoming a giant ice cube. Happy tales to you.
Is that it?
That's it.
Wow.
That is Mr. Nuts.
How did this game get made? Mr. Nuts.
Mr. Nuts.
Spelled with a Z. Spelled with a Z.
And the best part about Mr. Nuts is something they don't even mention on the back of the box. The first level in the game, I believe, is called Woody Land.
They knew exactly what they were doing.
So, Mr. Nuts in Woody Land. Also worth noting, if you have this game, it is worth a freaking fortune.
Really? Like,
yeah.
It's expensive.
Like, yeah, this game is very valuable. I remember I only saw it like in one store back in the day, and it was like an independent store. I never saw it any, you know, major chains like GameStop or whatever. And apparently I should have bought it because now it goes for like hundreds of bucks.
So explain to me how Mr. Nuts wound up on like every platform known to man. There's this SNES version. I think it was on the Genesis and it was on the Game Boy.
The Genesis version, I think it was a Mega Drive version. I don't think it ever came out in the US.
Ah.
And then I think there might have
there's
been
like a GBA
I mean, there were
version.
Definitely some Game Boy.
There's a Game Boy Color. It's crazy. I'd never heard of Mr. Nuts.
Yeah, most of these I don't think came out in the US.
Yeah. We're too smart for that. We're too smart for you, Mr. Nuts.
But I'm sure Mr. Nuts is huge over in Europe.
It's like, step aside, Mario. Mr. Nuts is in town.
Yes, exactly.
Well, it looks terrible. I don't care how much it is.
All I know is that when I saw it back when it was, you know, a new game, I thought it was hilarious.
It looks a little bit like Bubsy.
But I've never actually played it, so I don't know if it's actually any good or not.
Well, I have a soft spot in my heart for Bubsy. Maybe I can find some room in my heart for Mr. Nuts.
And all right.
His nuts.
Let's hope so. Anyway, that does it for this week's episode. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and you can find Scott at PlasticBugs. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com if you have anything you want to share with us, or for any other reason. And if you like the podcast, it would be great if you'd leave us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Scott Michella.
Send us some tweets. Tweet at us.
And our good martial arts buddy, Ryu.
Soryuken!
We will see you next time.